Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply. ebaymotors.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Spoke to the NWA World's Champion, Trevor Murdoch. Great interview in almost an hour. But if you want a World Champion VPN, NordVPN.com/Fightful has you covered. How about this? The fastest VPN in the world works on all your devices, and you get 4 months free with NordVPN.com/Fightful. You still get that great 30-day money-back guarantee if you don't like it for any reason. But you're going to love it. Why are you going to love it? You got that online threat protection. You got multiple tiers you can choose from. From the standard with the VPN, you can go up and get a pass. You can go up one more and get a locker as well. But even beyond that, change your virtual location with just one click. Avoid geo-blocking. Save money on pay-per-views and services that aren't available in the United States. Maybe you missed some of the old ways you used to watch wrestling. Well, you can still get those services by changing your virtual location to Canada, Lithuania, New Zealand, etc. NordVPN.com/Fightful, 4 months free. Enjoy our interview. What's up, you guys? Sean Ross Sapp, Fightful Wrestling here with a name you know. How about this NWA World's Champion, Trevor Murdoch? How does that sound to you?
Oh, man, I love to hear it.
I love to hear it, too. I mean, it. For so many years, the NWA was synonymous with Nick Aldis, and you became the guy that took that torch as we head into NWA 74, August 27th and 28th. You're in your second reign. What goes through your mind when you're told, like, yeah, NWA title, that's going to be yours, and you're going to unseat the guy that has, like, led our company for 4 or 5 years?
It's almost unbelievable. Because, you know, I've been doing it for a really long time, wrestling for a really long time, and there has been a lot of opportunities put in front of me. I have been told, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and I am, yes, sir, let's get this. And I'm literally, like, I've had other snares literally, like, hours before everything gets switched. So, to me, I really wasn't for sure if things were going to go the way they were supposed to till I literally walked on the stage and I was like, the ball's in my court now, boys. Like, ain't nobody can do nothing after this. And then it all became, you know, extremely real and just flood of emotions, man. You know, there's not very many men in this world that can say they're NWA World's Heavyweight Champion, let alone able to beat a guy of the statue of, like, Nick Aldis.
I mean, even in WWE, Drew McIntyre told me a couple weeks ago, like, when he beat Brock Lesnar, he halfway thought they were just going to edit it and have Brock win.
because it just doesn't, at times it just doesn't seem real. And obviously Drew's another guy who's put time in the business and had probably a lot of opportunities change on the fly for him. So yeah, I totally understand his sentiment.
And there are only 19 men who have held that title twice. You are now one of them. So how far ahead are you told, like, we're going to go with you as the champion? Was it something that was long-term, or did you just, like, kind of hear about it sort of abruptly?
There was conversations about it early on, and storylines were working towards that. There was never a for sure win.
Yeah.
But just, you know, NWA is really big on, you know, right time, right place. If it feels right, we're not going to fight it. We're just going to go, you know, we're going to go with what feels right. And, you know, when we got the Chase, Nick and I was already chasing after Nick. And then we ended up getting the Chase Park Plaza, the Coruscant Ballroom, that show popped up and the stars just kind of seemed to align. And that seemed like the perfect place, which it was, for me to start my reign as NWA World's Heavyweight Champion.
And your second one happened when Matt Cardona unfortunately went down with an injury. He is back at NWA 74, the two-night event. So, I mean, obviously that's a guy that you're probably going to be in the ring with. Have you ever wrestled him before?
I've never wrestled him. I wrestled him one time. It's funny how just full circle shit happened. I wrestled him years ago when I was WWE Tag Team Champion.
Okay.
And him and Brian were coming up, and we got a dark match with them. And those guys were, we saw, Lance and I saw the talent in those guys, and we went out and had a great match with them to try to showcase them. Full circle, we come back, and he's challenging me for the NWA World's title in a singles match, and he beat me. He's the one guy that I've sent messages already to. I'm saying it publicly, every podcast, every website. Sean, I'm telling you, Matt Cardona, when you're ready, after I make it through Tyrus, give me a couple of weeks, because that's not going to be an easy match in itself. But give me a couple of weeks, and Matt Cardona, come on back. I'm more than willing to give him the rematch I didn't get.
He's one of those guys that's kind of surprising that you guys managed to miss each other for as long as you did before you all had that match, right? Like, besides that one tag match, like, it's...
Yeah, we were always... Well, and that's... We were always in the same spectrum, just doing different things, going different directions. When they started moving up on the card and getting their opportunity, like when they got their opportunity with Edge and stuff, I was already 3-time WWE Tag Team Champion, kind of on my way out to go do other things. So it's... We've always been in the same world, just never had a chance to really lock horns.
I love talking to people that worked a lot in WLW because, man, you want to talk about, like, I think that it was so far ahead of its time in so many ways. Like, I feel like if NXT existed in, like, 2000, it would have been WLW because you had a Trevor Murdoch working against, like, Chuck Palumbo or Mark Jindrak. Or then maybe a few months later, you're working Butch Reed. Like, you've got all these different experience levels coming in and out. Like, that's what stood out to me. Like, I look down your matches, and it's like, oh, Butch Reed versus Trevor Murdoch. Like, that is fantastic that you were able to get that type of experience and work with people like that while also working with brand new people.
It was, like, I'm really blessed in the fact that Harley gave me just basically built my resume for me within WLW. All those guys truly respected Harley. So when they came in and Harley said, hey, I got a young guy that I think's got a lot of potential, can you go in there and really showcase him? This is my town. This is where we've been working. And I got blessed, man. I went, like you said, guys from Butch Reed to Bobby Eaton to Chuck Palumbo, Billy Gunn, the Harris twins. There's probably a one-man gang. I got a chance to wrestle one man. Now, I know that's a little older, but as a old-school wrestling fan, like, that's some bucket list shit right there for me. It really prepared me for the opportunities that were ahead of me later on. WLW was before ROH.
Yeah.
We started 2 years before ROH. There was a time period where, in my opinion, we were the best independent promotion in the country. Like, we had a lot of old school good wrestling talent that, and we were drawing houses. It wasn't nothing for us to draw a 400 seat house. and not have but a bunch of young guys that nobody knew and a couple names and, you know, Harley Race, you know. It was a good time, man.
And I look down through there, and you just, as I'm looking through, like, the list of people that you worked there, it wasn't out of the ordinary to see, like, Bobby Eaton or a young person like B.J. Whitmer, who became known within the wrestling world. I don't know if Tracy Smothers worked there. I just saw that you worked him elsewhere.
He came down, yeah.
I love that
he
guy.
He came down there. CM Punk was down there before CM Punk was there. Ace Steel was down there before he was Ace Steel. B.J., Colt Cabana. There was a lot of young talent that all wanted to come down and work for Harley. You know what I mean? To be able to say, like, hey, I've worked a show for Harley Race, which, again, gave us an opportunity because those guys were trained differently and we could mix and match our styles and learn, you know, quote unquote, learn from those guys and learn. That was my biggest thing. I wanted to learn everybody's styles so when I went in the ring, I could work and wrestle with anybody.
I know that around that time you also worked ECW as a part of the Dups. Did you think, like, that was it? Did you think, like, at this point, like, I'm headed to ECW, or did you think it was just, like, a short-term thing?
I just felt like it was a fill-in, you know what I mean? It was just, I was a fill-in spot. I was a greenhorn. I didn't know anything about the gimmick. When they brought us to TNA, when we originally brought us to TNA, that was my first TV experience, real hard TV experience, you know what I mean? In the back, you know, having producers, Vince Russo was a part of that. And, you know, he was coming up, he wouldn't come up with crazy ideas, but he would let me do whatever crazy idea I talked about. Like, I would throw out shit for the character and just be like, what do you think if I did this? And he'd be like, let's do it. And I'm like, all right. You know what I mean? And that, it really made me, it was actually the biggest rib in the business, because I was like, if this is how TV is, oh my God, I love this, because I had so much creative freedom. Everybody was working together. I was like, this is it. And, you know, obviously you get older and get other opportunities and you realize TV wrestling way more difficult than it was, than I thought it was.
And you guys got, you and Lance Cade got brought up to the WWE roster and won the tag team titles quickly. And I remember I was like, oh, I love this team. As soon as I saw that top rope bulldog, I was like, oh, that's, I love that move. Love that move.
I appreciate that. Not bad for a fat man. You know what I mean? Like, everybody's like, oh, where's he going? And I jump off there like, well, holy shit, he got a little something, something.
I love it. It's such like, it's a move that you see and you're like, that's a match ender. Like, that's it. Like, that's
a wrap.
I can
do it to anybody. That was the one thing, like Harley, I keep bringing his name up, but he's like, you need to have a finisher that you can do to everybody. And, you know, I couldn't do the pile driver like Harley because that was, a lot of people are uncomfortable with that. But I was like, man, the bulldog, that's easy, y'all. You just gotta be in the right spot, and if I can hit it, I can hit it.
I loved it. I like, especially at that time with tag team wrestling, you know, it would go up and down with WWE. You would never know how consistently somebody would be pushed, and it was such a fresh thing, and you guys got pushed immediately.
Instantly. Yeah, like, instantly.
Were you surprised by that?
Oh, for sure. Because, you know, I was a struggling independent pro wrestler. I skipped developmental. Like, There was a 5-week period where I got signed, vignette started, we were on TV. 3 weeks later, I'm World WWE Tag Team Champion. I was struggling to pay rent, but a month and a half before that, you know what I mean? So all of it was just like, holy shit. The only bad part about that is when you get something like that, that quick, that early, you've kind of like topped out a little bit. You know what I mean? And, that's where we kind of ran into that. We got with the writers and they're like, well, shit, they're already champions. Like, where we have to create, it was hard to create something after that. We had nothing to work towards. And plus we were working with writers that had no idea what country boys, rednecks are. When they hear country, they think Deliverance, you know, and banjos. And that wasn't the case at all.
That works if, like, you're Bray Wyatt and the Wyatt family in the backwoods and you're doing, like, the horror movie thing. But,
right.
Like, I can tell you, living in Kentucky, it's not quite like that.
Right. And Lance and I's argument was there's always like I've seen a ton of guys that are just like Lance, like wear the cowboy hat and the boots. And like, they wake up in the morning. That's who they are. And I've known 100 guys that were like me in the sense of, you know, they're not jacked. They're not like big and like just the I guess, quote unquote, the pro wrestling look. But they're guys you don't mess with. They're guys that work hard all their lives. And usually when they're at the bar, everybody knows who that's not the guy to mess. You know, just let's just leave him alone. When he gets mad, he gets really mad. Let's just leave that alone. You know what I mean? And that's what we were trying to portray.
So your second title run, I remember that one very specifically because you guys were working with like DX, the Hardy Boys, at one time a very young Cody Rhodes.
Yes.
At that time, could you have imagined Cody Rhodes developing into what he is today? Because I think we could see a couple years later when it was dashing Cody Rhodes that there was something there. But he came in and a lot of people were, you know, he had the nepotism claims.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And all that stuff as well.
Well, and that's something you've got to deal with a little bit as a second generation wrestler. I've got to work with a lot of second generation wrestlers. You know, I'm talking like Joe Henning, Teddy DiBiase Jr., Mike DiBiase Jr. A lot of, you know, it's just a stigma that those guys know they have to deal with, and they have to, if they really want to be successful, they've got to step out into their own path. Cody at that time was a great listener. He was absorbing everything. He had a tough go a little bit, you know, working with Bob. Bob's a tough guy to work with, let alone be a partner with at times, especially back then. And even Bob would tell you that as well. So Cody had a lot on his shoulders, but he seemed to handle it really well, and which made me and Lance want to give him more and wanted to showcase him and what he could do. Because, you know, he would get in there with guys at times that just wanted to, that knew that Cody would be moving up in the ranks and they wanted to get over on him. And it's just political, you know, horseshit of old school wrestling at times and old school thinking. Whereas Lance and I were smart enough to know, like that kid's moving up. Like, so why fight? Like, we're not going to fight it. Let's enhance it and help him get to the next level. And we got him, you know, Cody won his first world title from Lance and I as world tag team champion. So, you know, we felt really good that we were able to kind of help elevate him and hopefully that he was able to survive the system. That's the other thing. You can have a first generation father, but if you can't handle, it doesn't matter who you are, if you can't handle the system and make it through it, it don't matter. You know what I mean? So we were glad that he was able to, you know, push through and obviously very successful.
I remember you also appeared in TNA for quite a while in 2009. Were you like signed to a full-time deal or was it part-time? How did that work?
I was legitimately on a phone call deal. Like every week I was sitting around waiting to get a call going, okay, we're going to use you this week. Originally Lance and I were both, you know, we had exited from WWE. They had started a tag team tournament and they were going to bring Lance and I in and we were going to run to the finals and they hadn't had a decision on whether or not who was going to win the finals, but that was the original plan. The problem was that tournament fell within a time where Lance was already booked in Japan.
Oh, okay.
So he wasn't going to be able to make it. So I'm sitting there kind of like, you know, I still want to go. And I talked to Terry Taylor and he's like, all right, we'll still bring you in. He tagged me with Eric Young and we made it to the semifinals, I think, of that, you know. But after that, it was literally, you know, hey, we're going to bring you in this week. And I wouldn't even know what I was doing. Like, 1 week I wrestled Booker T in an I Quit match out of nowhere. I was like, all right, like, I'm excited I get a chance to work with Booker, but it's now in an I Quit match for what, you know.
It's like video game booking. Like,
yeah, you know what I mean? I was thrown in a match on a Clockwork Orange match yeah. with Raven, which is basically a hardcore match. And I'm like, why am I doing this? But all right, let's make the best of it. I did get a little bit of a little angle with Abyss and Stevie Richards, which brought me to a pay-per-view with Abyss. But I ended up kind of having a falling out. I'm not trying to be a student, you know. Taz was brought in as a producer first time, and I'm wrestling Rhino that night. Taz is my producer. And Taz, we were talking about the match, and Taz was, what's your finisher? And I was like, I do this top rope bulldog. And he's like, oh, that's awesome. Can you go ahead and you hit that on a Rhino? And then 1, 2, he kicks out, duck, spear, 1, 2, 3, yeah. And I was like, all of that sounds great, but can we switch it? Like, I do a beautiful high cross body, man. It looks very, you know, but I really would like to save the bulldog, man. I don't have a deal here. I've always been taught, if you're going to protect anything, protect your finisher, because that's where you carry it everywhere. You know what I mean? I didn't know it, but that didn't sit well. Taz, okay, no problem, blah, blah, blah. About an hour later, I get called into Terry Taylor's office. Me, Terry Taylor, Taz, and Road Dogg, Jesse James, which I was kind of friendly with Road Dogg, and he was a producer, and I think he was trying to be like a middleman to kind of help mediate all of this. Terry Taylor proceeds to just start chewing my ass, saying that I was being difficult because I didn't want to do my finisher, and that I was, you know, I was being basically being too much. Like, I should do what I'm told.
Yeah.
Basically. And I respectively told him, I said, you know where I come from, Terry. I said, you know how, I said, I don't have a deal here. I said, I just want to protect one thing. I said, what's the big fucking deal? Like, you guys have no plans for me. You have no direction for me. I said, that's the only thing that I've been able to go places with. And people go, oh, that's true. You know, that's the one thing.
It's one of the first things I mentioned in this interview.
Right. And, you know, he proceeded to tell me that, you know, why he disagreed with my, I'm just going to be I'm being tactful about it. You know, like he wasn't very happy with me and my decision. And I never got booked after that. Like, it was just, they just got dropped. And, you know, things work out for a reason. I truly feel like I made the right decision. I stood up for the right reasons. It was different. You're not paying my bills. So it's, you know, you obviously at the time didn't see enough value in me to put me under a deal. So I'm, you know, that's how I felt like it. And it was the right decision.
So, shortly after, I don't want to say shortly after that, maybe about a year and a half, you'd popped up doing some dark matches for WWE as well. How did that come about, and how did you feel there? What kind of feedback did you get? I'm very interested to see how that all unfolded.
That was a strange scenario in itself. I ended up coming across Shawn Michaels, and I kind of have a relationship, friendship, especially with Lance and stuff. And I ended up, we ended up on a phone call. I forgot why. It was talking about something. We were just talking about the business. I'd been away from the company for several years. And he had mentioned, he goes, you know, you ever thought about coming back? And I was like, well, I don't even know who to talk to.
Yeah.
And because things change in that company so much. And he goes, well, give me a minute. I'll call you back. And I get a call like 10, 15 minutes later. You know, Johnny Ace, hey, Trevor, we talked for about 10 minutes and, you know, asked me if I want to come in and do a dark, and have them take a look at me. And I was like, sure, yeah, let's see if we can do some business again. At the very least, I felt at that time, like I could get a Val Venus job.
Sure.
And what I mean by that is just going out there with young guys, helping elevate them and making them look good. And still keeping myself strong, but obviously they win. You know what I mean? But go out there and have good matches and try to help take young guys to the next level.
Yes.
So I come in, I do two dark matches. I think I did a singles match with Evan Bourne, and then the next night was against one of the Usos. And had great matches, you know, basic, you know what I mean? You go out there and let them, everybody know you still work, you're still in decent shape.
Yeah.
I got a call from Hunter that next week saying, hey, listen, we're going to go ahead and bring you in. We're going to, you know, basically we're going to put you in that Val Venus role. He goes, but I want to, you know, just I want to tell you though something, Trevor. We brought Steve Austin in as a quote unquote in a Val Venus role, so the opportunity is really up to you. You know what I mean? And I was like, great, man, this is awesome. He goes, we'll call you, get everything set up when we start getting on the road. I waited around for like a week and a half, and I got a call from Johnny Ace, and he gave me damn near virtually the same exit speech as he did when I lost my job. Trevor, with budgets and stuff right now, we're having a bunch of budget cuts around here. We don't feel right now financially it'd be a good time to bring you in. And I was like, all right. Like, it was a really weird scenario. And I just laughed about it, you know, because at that time, man, I'd already... You know, with WWE, the worst thing you can do to a WWE wrestler is fire. Because that's the only thing we're, quote unquote, really scared of. Yeah. So once you fired us, well, shit, like we already been through the horrible feeling of being fired. And we know what the emotional roller coaster is. So if you bring us back and let us go, like, I already know what's going to happen. It doesn't have nearly the effect as it did the first time.
Of course.
So I just laughed about it and just continued to look forward. And now, you know. Now I'm at an age where, like, I would never – I know people go, hey, you know, don't ever say never about WWE. It's – there's a different system there, man, that and a stress level there that I don't ever want to ever deal with again.
So in light of the changes that we just saw, like, did that even make you go, maybe? Because, I mean, we have seen, like, over the past few weeks, like, half a dozen people come back. I had people that are in AEW now that are like, oh, I love AEW – but I probably wouldn't have even hit my renegotiation period, much less left WWE, had I known that Triple H was going to be in control of creative, because they were loyal to him. You hear people saying wrestling, and they're saying the referees' names on TV again. It's a marked difference now than what it was a month ago.
Oh, completely. I had a chance to work, like you said, I got a chance to work with DX and Hunter. When on behind the scenes was constantly talking to us about wrestling and wrestling ideas. When I heard that Hunter was taking over, I was stoked. You're going to see a whole brand new product, in my opinion, a product we all love and enjoy again in about 3 months. You're going to take some time to build different angles and people and stuff like that. But one thing about Hunter is he's not afraid to listen to the people, and he's smart enough not to give it all away. You know what I mean? Right now, there's some other companies out there, and I'm not going to name any names, that are just throwing every single thing they have. As soon as they get their hand on it, they just want to get it out, get it to the people. And, you know, there's something to be said about a nice, slow build on things. And that's what you're going to see out of Hunter and WWE. We're going to have this conversation in about 3 or 4 months, Sean, and we're going to be talking about what's going on in WWE, because they're going to have pro wrestling on their TV.
I'm also very interested about your run in Ring Ka-King. That was a fascinating project.
Yes, it was.
I mean, every so often we see a company always try to penetrate the Indian market. I mean, it's a huge audience. I can't possibly convey to our audience, our English-speaking audience, how big the Indian audience is for wrestling.
Huge.
It's enormous. And yes. you were a part of that. Like, how did that come about?
I got a call. Dave Lagana's name has bounced up in and out throughout my life. Dave Lagana is one of those guys who called me, and he said, hey, Jeff is putting together a show, some shows over in India, and we need a cowboy. And we need like... And what, you know, the way he was trying to explain it to me, basically what he needed was the generic cowboy, because over in India, they don't understand redneck country. yes. and cowboy are three different things. All they know is, you know, he country, you know, so they wanted cowboy hat, chaps, the vest, you know, which was no problem for me. And plus, Jeff was a part of it. And I was a part of the original TNA. I was a part of the first like 8 or 9 episodes when it was the weekly pay-per-view model there. And obviously Jeff knows what he's doing. He built the company up to now. We're still talking about that company. So I was like, yeah, I was on board. I was ready to go. Plus I had never spent any time in India. So it's one of those countries that I wanted to mark off my worldly map. And man, you talk about crazy, like positive crazy.
Yeah.
There's positive and negative, and there was both in India. You watch TV shows sometimes, and you'll see scenes where they're at the airport, and there's craziness going on all around, yeah. and there's cars are. Bro, that's a shoot. Like there's like you walk out of the lobby of the airport, and there are a ton of people waiting for their whoever. But behind them, the roads and the streets, the laws are different, obviously, over there than they are here. And the street etiquette is different. So you're constantly hearing horns blow and people zooming off in front of you, cutting you off. And whereas that would not work over here. There'd be a lot of fights over here if people drove like that. But then, you know, I took a 2.5-hour taxi ride to our hotel. And that in itself was like crazy experience because you'd be driving through these towns, you'd be out in the middle of nowhere, and then you'd come and hit this town and you would see the beautiful house, nice put together, and right next to it would be a shanty, like a house made with nothing but roof sheeting. And there'd be 2 or 3 of those houses, and then right next to that house would be another beautiful home that you and I would live in, and so on and so forth. And so there's no middle class there. There is the haves and the have-nots, and they just coexist. Like, that's just how life is. But it was an amazing experience. On top of the fact, you go in there to wrestle. India doesn't have a lot of wrestling companies. They don't get a lot of live pro wrestling. So we were like rock stars there. They had, I think, you know, ticketing was either really cheap or free, which brought the masses, man. Yeah. I'm talking like they had to, they had to close the doors and say, we can't fit any more people in here, which was amazing in itself. But also you're walking by the fans, they're pulling, they're trying to touch you. They want to, you know, I've had them pull my hair, just trying to have a little bit of my hair. Crazy, insane. But as a wrestler, you ate every bit of it up. You're like, this is awesome. I got to have a Mumbai street fight with Doc Gallows,
yes.
Which started on a back of a flatbed tractor trailer truck. It was awesome, man. We worked our way back into the arena through the crowd. They had all this Mumbai street fight stuff set up from around the ring. The one thing I remember is me and Doc had a spot set up where I was going to jump off the ramp. He was going to be laid out on this cart, and I was going to jump off the ramp and drive an elbow through, and we're going to come crashing through the cart. It was going to be a great part of our match. And so we got it set up. We talked to all the guys. We found the cart. It was real rickety. You know what I mean? Could kind of help brace us a little bit. It was going to hurt like hell, but at least it softened the blow a little bit. And we found the cart. We got it all set up. We walked through it. Me and Doc, you know, we tell everybody like, these are where the carts are going to be on each side of the ring. Don't mess with them. We're going to every production guy. Cause a lot of them are Indian yeah. folks. And we were just double check. Like, don't touch this. Don't move it. Okay. No problem. No problem. It's time for our match. We're going out. We're having our match. Everything's great. Bah, bah, bah. I got Doc. I'm just hammering forearms. I lay him on the card. I do the slow walk up the ramp to try to, you know, I'm getting the pop, you know, and I'm standing on the ramp and I'm tough guy in this shit, you know, and I jump up and go to drive the elbow. And what we didn't know was we obviously missed somebody and didn't tell somebody because somebody switched the ramps, switched the carts for the visuals. There were better visuals for this ramp to be on this side. And we had, or this cart to be on this side of the ramp. And we had no idea. And I come down with the elbow, and me and Doc just go, and it just, I mean, both of us slide off the card. We're what the fuck? And you see us just kind of lay there for a good probably 60 seconds because both of us just knocked the piss out of each other. Me, my 270-pound ass coming down on Doc, and me landed on the cart just solid as concrete.
Oh, amazing. So, I mean, I assume you mentioned Lagana. I assume he is who also brought you into NWA. But I'm still interested to find out how that came about, because there were a couple times we had heard maybe you were finished with wrestling, or maybe you were stepping away. How did that all work out for you? I mean, how did it all come together, rather? We know how it worked out. Worked out damn
right.
Well.
Right. I was kind of phasing myself out. You know, you can still wrestle in this country, and that you can do smaller shows, and people just, you know, they just don't get promoted as well as other shows. So you can kind of run under the radar a little bit. I felt like a round peg in a square world. Professional wrestling was changing. I didn't feel like I had a foothold in that landscape anymore. I was a great, you know, come out to the ring. Oh, we know that guy, but it wasn't the oomph, you know what I mean, that I needed. Yes. And what I thought pro wrestling needed. So, and plus Harley, his health was declining, and I was trying to be there more for him. And so it really felt like it was the right time to kind of, you know, work my way out. And I was just telling, you know, some of the promoters, I was like, this is probably going to be my last show. Like I don't have the love and the drive for it and the time and effort that is needed to be successful in this business. And I remember as a young guy, sometimes I would see older guys get brought in and they would just be so grizzled, and they'd be just there because they needed the payday.
Yeah.
And they would go out and they would wrestle and do just enough to say they were there. They would hustle everybody at the merch table for every little nickel and dime thing. And I was like, if I ever get to that point, like I need, like, please somebody tell me, take me out, and boom, shoot me, just let me be done. And I kind of felt like that's where I was not headed, but I might've been, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Just wrestling itself. So Harley passes away, and that to me felt like that was the stamp. Like, okay, like this is full circle shit here. And NWA graciously came to Harley's funeral to pay respects. Nick Aldis was the current world champion at the time, and Dave Lagana was there. And after the funeral, they both kind of cornered me a little bit. And we were talking, asking me what I was doing. I explained to them that I was working my way out. And they said, well, we're starting this new program with Billy Corgan, NWA Power. You know, we want you to come down for one show. You know what I mean? I was like, no, like guys, like that's TV shit. That's Billy Corgan. That's you guys are asking me to go in the opposite direction. I feel like I'm going, yeah. You know, that's work, you know? And they said, just come down. He goes, you don't even have to wrestle. Have you produce a match, you know, just your experience is needed in the background. But bring your gear. You never know. Right, Trevor? You never know. Right. So I said, all right, I'll come down for one show. And I came in and I ran in. I walked into GPB Studios and I ran right into Dave Lagana first thing. And the first, hey, Trevor, how's it going? Great. And he goes, did you bring your gear? And I said, yeah. I said, I always, you know, he goes, all right, you're wrestling Ricky Starks tonight. all right, you know. So I go out there and I have that match with Ricky, thinking like, all right, you know, one and done. Take again, you know, I have no problem putting this young cat over. He's the next thing, next big thing, you know. And I go out there and have a great match with Ricky, and the people are extremely supportive. Ricky's very respectful. Get done with the match, and as I walk through the curtain, you know, Nick and Dave and Billy are all standing there, and they're like, you got way more in the tank than you give yourself credit for. I was like, thank you. Like, we already got you booked for tomorrow. And it just, I got booked.
I remember those tapings. Like, I think I'm pretty sure you worked like Aldis and Ricky and Josephus. Like, and then another match. I can't remember exactly what it was, but I remember, like, as we got the results, it's like, oh, Trevor Murdoch worked like four matches at those tapings.
In one day. Yeah. And it just worked out that way. You know what I mean? Like, obviously, if there wasn't something left in me, I wouldn't be where I'm at. You know, those guys are very honest. That's the cool thing about NWA and not just with the office, but with the other wrestlers. We're all really honest with each other. We elevate through honesty. And a lot of times when you hear honesty, it's not always going to be something you like to hear. It's not going to be not always going to be pleasant, but it's the truth. And it's the way we're going to be able to move forward. I've never gotten better in this business in pro wrestling with somebody patting me on the back going, Trevor, good job. You're amazing. Jesus Christ. You're fucking money, brother. Never. But when the guys come up to me, hey, man, I was watching your match and I saw you do this. He goes, maybe either don't do that or what about this or what about that or you need to work or you know what I mean? Like, and it's not taking shots at each other. It's just trying to elevate through honesty. And that's, man, that's really powerful. We've got a really good locker room of guys that just want to help elevate everybody. You've got an office with Billy and all the NWA executives that have their ears open to us, which we may not always get to do everything we want, but they're very trusting in us as the talent to go out there and be successful. You know, that's, this is what we get a lot. This is our idea. You do the wrestling part and go make that work. And I'm like, well, fuck yeah, I can do that. Like that's my job. Let me be the wrestler. Let me make this make sense. Let me try to find the emotional connection to the people that make them want to see more of this and buy a ticket to come and watch. And, you know, Billy and all the producers are smart enough to know, like, hey, we're not the ones doing it. So maybe we need to trust the guys that we've brought in as talent, trust these guys that we have given responsibilities to go out there and do it. And it's a different scene, too, for a wrestler. You walk in, there's no music. There's no smoke. There's no, like, there's nothing to hide you at all. There's just a ring, some ropes, and you've got three rows of people on half side of the ring that you've got to impress. And some of those critics are way worse than having a 500 seat house. You know what I mean? Because those people, they're right there. They see everything. So you cannot, there is no, you know, let's stop and retape or let's like, this is live on the go. You either sink or swim scenario. And man, I get fired up with that pressure, man, because that's some good shit right there. It produces some of the best pro wrestling.
Well, you and Nick Aldis, you had mentioned him as part of like how he recruited you there. He seems to have a really good grasp of old school pro wrestling, obviously. He's such a phenomenal, like, big match wrestler too. Like, and he has carefully curated himself to where he is a top guy. Like, he dresses like one, he talks like one, he looks like one, he wrestles like one, and in those big matches he delivers big time. And that's what led to your world championship match. What kind of vibe had you gotten from him? I feel like you had worked with him in Rinka King in the past, actually. So how familiar were you with him?
Nick, I was actually world tag team champion for WWE when Nick got his first wrestling experience over here in the States. He came to Harley's week-long camp that he would have. And we would have WWE officials there. We'd have TNA officials there. We'd have NOAA officials there. And they would, Harley would, this big week-long camp, and you'd come in, and there'd be like 120 guys that would come in, and we'd run them through we just run them through the mill, basically, have matches, and just were an opportunity for guys to get seen in front of these officials and get opportunities. Well, Nick actually was one of those guys, and I remember specifically, you know, walking through the crowd of guys and just, you know, talking to them and interacting with them and just kind of showing them, like, I didn't want to big league anybody. You know what I mean? I wanted to be an example that you can be on top and still be humble.
Yeah.
And Nick was one of those guys that I stopped and talked to because he was from England. And I was like, oh, wow. Like, it's awesome that you came all the way over here for this. We had a really great conversation. Fast forward, you know, Nick starts doing well. I'm doing well in WWE and he does TNA, blah, blah, blah. We end up meeting in Rinka King and obviously extremely friendly. And this was before, this is either right before he had Donovan or during, his son Donovan, right before maybe Mickey's pregnancy, about to have Donovan. We were talking about children and I had already had two of my three kids already were in the world and just trying to give him some advice, you know, being a new dad and how you know, everybody talks about it changing everything, and it freaks you out. But it's a good change. It's an accept, you know what I mean? And sure enough, I think I saw him at an independent show, maybe, I don't know, 5 or 6 months later. And we're talking, and he goes, "Hey, I just want to stop and tell you." He goes, "Everything you said was true." Like, he goes, "I'm thank you for that." You know what I mean? Because it really calmed his nerves about becoming a new dad, which I think that kind of helped foster a good relationship between him and I, which, you know, led to an opportunity with NWA. I don't know, looking back on it now, if the way things went, if maybe Nick would be so friendly, because I've kind of come in, I've been blessed, you know, things have went well for me. I've earned my spot. That's the one thing, like, no one can ever say about me and NWA, like, I didn't walk in and just, you know, take over or at the very least just run the show. I started from the bottom, and I had my ass kicked from the bottom all the way up to the top, which led me to Nick. And with Nick being that old school pro wrestling, he really knows how to tell stories, and he really knows how to get the most out of things, which is extremely important to be successful. Because to be a champion, you not only got to get yourself over, but you have to help get your opponent over.
Yeah.
And Nick is, I give all the credit in the world to Nick. He really kind of brought me up to his level, and he deserves that respect. And Nick and I don't always agree on personal things now, and we don't always agree on our pro wrestling now, but as men, I think we have a lot of respect for each other. And I will, you know, you can't take away what Nick's done in this business. He is a fine example for a young man that wants to come up in this business. He's a perfect example of what all in really means.
Yeah, largely reestablished that title. I mean, before he won that title in my brain was, well, I guess I'm going to go to Wikipedia and see who the NWA champion is right now. Like, it was one of those before he
I wrestled for the NWA world title in that era of just didn't have the popularity and the prestige that it used to have. You know what I mean? So all, you know, that's the one thing, like, you know, I give Nick all the credit. He took a company and a title and he made it mean something.
Sacrificed quite a bit to do it too. Cause I mean, he had other options and other offers, and it very clearly was important to him. So I think that's something that should be applauded. But we go ahead. Sorry.
No. But that's your 100%. But he also knew too, like, he, with going with the NWA, he can be in complete control. And that's very valuable to a pro wrestler, to be able to have complete control over your career, your direction. Sure. Whereas you go to a lot of the other companies, they don't have that same vision. You know, might end up being like Tyrus and
so
dancing.
So I remember Darby Allin, we did a media scrum with him, and they were like, "Oh, well, what about WWE? And he said, "They'd have me jacking off in a boiler room somewhere."
Right. And like, well,
you just never know.
And you didn't. You know what I mean? Like, that was the hard part, and a lot of fans don't understand. When you work your ass off to get to the number one company in the world, and you get there, and you're like, wow, this is fucking horseshit. Like, this is crazy. The thought process and the way they do business at times, and they seem to make things so much harder for themselves and for their talent. And it was a crazy, crazy time. I think over the last several years, they've been able to bring an atmosphere of professionalism to the locker room, and a behavior where, you know, an expectation that their wrestlers behave and carry themselves in a different manner, very professional
I worked on a story years ago about Muhammad Hassan and what went wrong and all that. And I had people that were there in 2005 and that were there when I wrote the story in 2016. And they said, oh, if the locker room was around the way it was today, he'd still be there. He would have lasted. He wouldn't have been ostracized the way that he was for a lot of perceived disrespect things. So, like, I got to complete, based on what I hear, it seems to be the case.
It was a really tough atmosphere, man. There was it was at a time where guys would backstab other guys to get opportunities. That was one of the good things about with Lance and I. When we Lance and I would wrestle, and if we wanted to go party with whatever town we were in, if we wanted to just go have fun and enjoy the atmosphere, we always asked the boys, hey, where are you guys going? Oh, man, this is a hot spot, man. We're going this place right next to this place. And Lance and I would be like, great, we're going to go over here.
Yeah.
And we're gonna go do this. You
hear the old Rockers story about how they got hired and fired in the same week because they were partying with the boys. And right. They got tested, they got too wild, and they had to hit the bricks.
And, you know, back then, some of the boys would go party with you and pretend like they were your friends, and you guys would get all fucked up, and then they would go back to the office knowing that what you had just done and stewed you out for a piss test. And that was their way to try to get rid of, quote-unquote, what they thought was a problem. I remember a time... This is a little story, kind of funny. Lance, we went to a town. I'm not going to say the town, but Lance wanted to go out that night, which where it was really kind of flip flop. I was always the guy that wanted to go out and experience the town and have a good time. But he wanted to go out, and I said, no. He goes, well, a couple of the guys said they're going to be at this bar. I'm going to go there. I said, well, if it's a good time, call me. Yeah. I'll get a cab. We'll roll on down. There wasn't Uber at that time.
Yeah.
And so he calls me like, 45 minutes later, hey man, this place is kicking. Like, come on down. So I take a cab down there, and this bar was called Union Station. So I walk in and open up the door, and like all the bar stools are up on the bars, and like there's dust on everything. And I'm like, all right, Lance, good rib, buddy. You got me out of the house. Good job, you know. But I look back in the back of the room, and there's this door, and out, like, you could see the outline of the door because there's like lights blinking through it.
Oh,
and, like,
gosh.
You're hearing this music, you know. I was like, what the hell is that? You know, I go to open up the door, and I hope this doesn't sound bad, but every rap, every dance video I've ever seen, people are getting it, and like the whole stage is full of people in there, and I'm just this redneck with the door open going, oh, this is the rib, this is Lance, you got me. And I hear Trevor, and I'm like, look, Trevor. And I'm looking around, and I look up, and up in the balcony is Lance, Edge, Melina, Johnny Nitro, and they are all up there just a getting it, having a good time, man. And I'm like, okay, all right. You know, went up there and we started having some drinks, man, and just had the best time. And it wasn't but six of us. We all knew exactly what we did. Edge was there, so we knew, like, there wasn't going to be any trouble, you know what I mean? So, yeah, it was those kind of things that we'd go out and do, you know, away from the majority of the boys, just to try to keep our, you know, just not have any issues. You know what I mean? We just wanted to wrestle and be successful. That's all.
Well, as we wrap up NWA 74, August 27th, 28, two nights or 2 days on this show. Thus far, I think 19, 20 matches booked between those 2 days. How do you feel about the 2-day format?
You know, I'm excited, but it's also a tough sell for a lot of people because, you know, it's a lot of pro wrestling, but it also makes us step up. You know what I mean? When we know we've got, if anybody looked at the last 2-day pay-per-view we had last year, everybody went above and beyond and killed it. So you're going to have the same thing here too. I'm hoping that folks will realize, like, this is our WrestleMania. This is our biggest show of the year. So everybody's going to go out there and try to impress. Tyrus and I have a lot on our plate just in the fact of not only our match, but everybody before us is going to go out there and try to top the next person. And we're going to be the last to try to top it all. Billy, boy, I tell you what, Billy don't mess around when it comes to the world title. He always wants the biggest and the best he possibly can. And he put a guy 6'8", 6'9", damn near 400 pounds in front of me to wrestle. And I'm still currently trying to figure out, how do you move a mountain?
Well, I mean, you've got, like I said, 20 matches. So that's what you had mentioned. You've got all those people that you've got to follow effectively for the richest prize in the NWA. We had heard about Tyrus being put in that spot. What did you think when that was adjusted and changed?
Well, when I found out I was wrestling Nick at first, like I know Nick probably better than anybody in the company.
Yeah.
I spent 6 months with him chasing after the world title and playing the head games. So I kind of felt like to a certain extent I had it, at the very least, it was very level between Nick and I. He knows me as well too. So I was excited about that. Then when it switched to Tyrus, first off, what's going on between Nick and Billy is sure, it's none of my business. Those guys want to take some public jabs at each other. They're more than welcome to. I think when I don't focus directly on myself is when I have issues. I got my horse blinders on, brother, and I'm focusing on me and me alone. So when he told me that I was going to be wrestling Tyrus, I was like, all right, like this is so. I'm just, it's going to be a painful evening, not only for him, but for me too. Cause you've got a guy that big, we're not going to go out there and have the technical match of the year. We're not going to go out there and have this high spot fest of matches. You're going to see two guys go in there. And I mean, the best way I can put it, Sean, is we're going to beat the shit out of each other and see who can handle the most. You know what I mean? I'm the biggest test Tyrus is. And Tyrus is definitely going to be the biggest test I've had today.
And as a tag team guy who is well-versed in the style, what do you think of them bringing back the NWA United States tag titles? I mean, 30 years they've been gone, but I mean, like, the Freebirds, the Fantastics, Midnight Express, Varsity Club all held those titles. Dick Murdoch was a champion as well. Khrushchev and Ivan Koloff, like, there are some really established names there that held those titles back in the 80s and early 90s.
Yes, sir. Tag team wrestling used to be like a main staple on like any pro wrestling show. Like fans, when they came to a pro wrestling show, expected to spend time and watch a 30 to 45 minute tag match because you had four guys going in there and battling it out. The spectrum of pro wrestling has changed, where tag team wrestling wasn't really focused and it wasn't really put out there in the mainstay. NWA really feels like that's an opportunity for us to really shine, really give an opportunity for tag teams to go out there and kill it. With that, we've got so many tag teams out there, so many wrestlers out there that we want to make sure we give, you know, enough. We want to have an opportunity for other people. So when they brought up the idea of bringing up the US tag titles, I was like, hell yeah. Like this just brings more competition for us, more guys wanting to come in and kind of show out, because who doesn't want to be the first U.S. tag team champ? Like, you know what I mean? There's going to be a lot of guys shooting for that, man. And it's, again, you and the fans are the ones that win.
Trevor, I want to thank you so much. You've been so generous with your time. I could talk to you all day. We're going to save some for the next go around. NWA,
yes, sir.
74, August 27th and 28th. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Sean, man. It's really nice to talk wrestling, and it's also nice to talk to somebody who knows what the hell they're talking about.
I appreciate it.
It makes my job a whole lot easier, man, so I appreciate it.
Until next time, guys, we're out.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.